Recently, I was reading, or I have an audio tape by C.S. Lewis, and he was describing what is called the four loves. And he got to the subject of, I think it's agape love, and he was quoting something from St. Augustus, I think, about he had lost a dear friend, Abridius. He was very close to his friend. And he was describing the desolation in which he was plunged because he had been very close to this friend and had lost a dear friend. And he said, Augustus says something here. I want to quote something that he says. This is the conclusion the moral, he came to after being so close to his friend and then losing his friend. This was the lesson that he got from it. He says, this is what happens, or this is what comes, when you give your heart unto anything but God. All creatures are temporary. It's the very nature of the universe that all creatures should pass away and make room for others. Very true, you know, in order to have a temporary universe, you live and you die. You can't have a temporary universe on any other term. To give one's heart to a created being is to court disaster. If love is to mean, in the long run, happiness and not misery, it must be love for the only one that does not pass away. His conclusion was sort of very strange. His conclusion was, the moral of what he got out of this, out of being so close to his friend and then losing his friend, was love God only and you won't get hurt. If you want to play it safe and not get your heart broken, love God only. Don't love any created being. Don't love anything, not even a pet. Now, in other words, just love for God only. Now, I think about this. I remember as a little boy, I was 9 or 10 years old, I had a pet. It was a pet duck, of all things. It was a little beautiful white duck. His name was Downy. And I guess I was in love with a duck. I had a little scrapbook, and I had actually a feather from that duck. So I think I still have it today, the scrapbook. I had the color of his eyes in there. I had its weight, how much the duck weighed. I even had a footprint of the duck. And my sister had to talk me into that one. I think we took one of those little things that a secretary uses to stamp a little ink. I don't know what you call them, but we stamped his foot, ink mat. We stamped his foot on this ink mat and made a footprint of the duck. Well, one day, it was early in the morning, my mother said that my duck had gotten killed. I think a fox or a dog or something had killed this duck. And I was heartbroken over this duck that had gotten killed. I think I cried. As a little boy, I cried because of this duck. And I told my mother I didn't want to go to school. And she made me go to school anyway. And that was a valuable lesson there, because I learned that you had to get on with life and get over the grieving process. But, you know, I can understand what it means, what Augustus meant when he said, you know, to love anything, you know, that you can get your heart broken. I understand where he's coming from when he comes to this conclusion of love God only. If you really want to play it safe, don't love anything, no created being, not even a pet. Now, I sometimes think that we too can have this attitude that says, I will love God only. I mean, let the world go to, you know, let the world go down the drain. As for me and my house, I will love God and God only. After all, the Bible tells me to love not the world or the things in the world, and I'm just going to love God. Forget about people. My father tells a story back in when he fought over in Germany in World War II. told the story several times that he would, when they would bed down for the night, in order to try to escape the hell of war, the pain, the suffering, a lot of times he would take his cover or whatever they slept in, sleeping bag, and just pull that thing completely over his head and just sort of hide from the horror of fighting over there in that cold climate, just hiding from the pain and the suffering of war, trying to escape it. Sort of like we do when we're children, you know, we close our eyes and say, I bet you can't see me. Never did figure that one out. I used to do that, but, you know, bet you can't see me. But trying to escape that, the pain of war. But I'd like to talk about today a greater fear that we have that causes us to go into hiding. It's the fear of love. The fear of a relationship. Now, maybe you experienced this, maybe with the first day of school. You can remember, you know, sort of having a fear of meeting new people and making friends, relationships. Maybe you experienced it on the first day on your job, a new job. Fear of relationships. If you've ever been hurt, if you've ever gone through a divorce, you can say, I'll never love again. And you can go into a hiding. If you've ever been hurt in a friendship, these can be the most devastating, to have someone you love, a friend, hurt you. I remember a guy I knew in school. I knew him all through school. We were good friends, and then God opened my eyes and called me, and I began to share some things with this friend, and I shared a little magazine with him, a watch, I think it was a watch magazine or something like that. And he really got upset over that. He got offended by it. I was hurt by that. It hurt deeply to have a friend that I was close to, you know, reject that. And so being hurt is one of the reasons you can go into hiding. The fear of love, fear of relationship, hiding from love. The fear of love. And there are disguises that we can use. We can say, well, I don't need people. You know, I'm the hermit type. I could move up into a mountain, become a hermit, never see another person the rest of my life, be totally content. There are disguises that we use. Or I don't need I don't need a friend, or, you know, I don't need a husband or a wife or whatever it may be. Now, I know that there are such a thing as introverts and extroverts. I am very much an introvert. I'm very much to myself. I love my privacy. And there's some people, by nature, I'm like that. And then there are other people who are extroverts. They like being around people and associating and have a group around them. They love that. So, but there are people who spend their entire lives avoiding relationships. It's a defensive mode we can get into. Avoiding people, avoiding friendship, a life of withdrawal and isolation. We can get to the point to where we are in our own little prison, where we're cut off from others. Now, the person hiding from love can be, or relationships can be, friendly, outgoing, dynamic personality, generous, giving, always helpful. But there's one thing you cannot do. You can't get close to that person. And I think sometimes, I think of the turtle. You're riding down the road, and it's right after a rain. You see this turtle trying to cross the road. And you straddle it. And poof, he sticks his head back in the shell. And maybe, imagine the turtle on a busy six-lane highway, Los Angeles, California. Sticks his head out, and here comes three tractor trailers, zoom, flying by. He sticks his head back in the shell. Sticks his head back out, and zoom, here comes some more 18-wheelers zooming by. Sticks his head back in the shell, and he says, I am tired of this. I am going to go back in my shell. No, I'm not coming back out. I'm going to stay there. Now, I'd like to quote something else from C.S. Lewis. He says, to love at all is to be vulnerable. Love anything, and your heart will be wrung and possibly broken. If you want to make sure of keeping it intact, that is your heart, you must give it to nothing. not even an animal. You must carefully wrap it around hobbies and little luxuries, routines, and avoidances of entanglement, and then lock it up in the casket of your own selfishness. Powerful words, if you want to keep that heart. And if all of this isn't bad enough, the fact that we lock ourselves in our self-made prison, where we daily avoid relationships because of maybe the past, painful past, maybe we got our heart broke, maybe we got hurt by friendship, and we go into the hiding mode. If all this isn't bad enough, then you add to that the fact that we deliberately busy ourselves to death in order to avoid relationships. What's our justification for that? Well, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. And that's from the Bible. But you can carry anything to the extreme. You learn that at the feast. You can carry anything to the extreme. Eating too much. Anything can be carried to the extreme. But there's more to filling our lives to the full than just the pursuit of vanity. There's a friend, his name is Elmer. We fill our lives to the full. He's got a garage, a big warehouse actually, beside our warehouse, near it. He's an elderly man. He's got that warehouse full of junk. Well, it's not junk. It's good stuff to him. But then he's got the outside of it, surrounded by more stuff. And so he had the opportunity. A building supply was going out of business. They had 18 pallets of building supply. Hinges, plumbing, wiring, everything. Just like if you walk into the Lowe's building supply, they had stocked it up on about 18 pallets. And they said, we want to sell this. And so he goes up there, and they tell him what they want, and Elmer says, I wouldn't give half that, and walks off. And then they call him back, and they said, were you serious? Was that an offer, half that? He said, well, yeah, it's an offer. So he gets these 18 pallets of building supply material. A hardware store. We went around looking at it. Around this building, just stacked up, and he pulled back a canvas. There's every type of hinge, just everything you can imagine under the sun. It's all there. Now, what's funny is his son has already said, we know this, I don't think he knows it, but his son has already said, when he passes on, I'm getting rid of all of his junk. I'm not keeping it. I'm going to just sweep it up and get rid of it. But there's more to filling our lives to the full than just the pursuit of vanity. We fill our lives to the full in order to avoid relationships sometimes. Love anything, and your heart will be broken. If you want to make sure of keeping it intact, you must give it to nothing. You must carefully wrap it around hobbies and little luxuries, routines, and avoidances of entanglement, and then lock it up in the casket of your own selfishness. Now you might say, well, how do you know so much about this? Well, trust me, I know about the avoidance. About the avoidance of relationships and just busying myself to death. I'm good at it. Hugh Hewitt, in his book, The Embarrassed Believers, said that we live in an era of, hello, I must be going. I gotta go. I say that all the time to my wife. I'll be getting ready to go, and I'll say, I gotta go, and I'm not talking about going to the bathroom like that commercial, you know. I mean, I've gotta go get to work. And I'll say, I gotta go. And she'll say, well, you go. Because she gets tired of me saying that. I gotta go. And she'll just tell me, well, you go. Get out of here. Hello, I must be going has come to describe most human relationships. Millions of marriages, hello, I must be going. Children and parents, hello, I must be going. Professional colleagues and co-workers, hello, I must be going. Church members, leaders, brethren, hello, I must be going. Just plain old friends, hello, I must be going. And he talks about the crumbling of civic cement, that relationship is no longer important as a culture. It's just not that important. No, it's no time for it. No time for it. And how many times I've had the choice to between two. The choice. I'm driving home, I think, you know, old so-and-so, I should go by and see her. She always tells me how much she likes to see me. But I'm faced with a choice between relationship and the things I want to do. Guess what I choose? The things I want to do. Hey, I'm busy. I'm busy. You know, we're on our way to success. I've got a business with responsibilities to take care of. Or I'm a professional, and what I do well. And there really is no time. And the attitude that permeates our culture, you know what's so sad about, hello, I must be going? It began a long time ago with our children. There was a guy that sung a song about it. Cats in the Cradle. Well, my son turned 10 just the other day. He said, thanks for the ball, Dad. Come on, let's play. Can you teach me to throw? I said, no, not today. I got a lot to do. He said, that's okay, as he walked away. But his smile never dimmed. And he said, I'm going to be just like him. I was listening to a story of an elderly man now, but he's telling the story. He said, it's sort of similar to that song, Cats in the Cradle. He said that as a boy, his father always liked working on vehicles, always busy, and he had, as a boy about 9 years old, he had a little toy or something he'd just gotten, a ball or something. And he came in there, and his dad was working on the car. He said, Dad, let's play. Let's go out and play. And his dad was already frustrated. And his dad looked at him, you know, grimly, and looked at him right in the face and said, let's get one thing straight. I'm your daddy, not your friend. The elderly man now tells, he says, that had a devastating effect on his life. There was something that changed at that moment. I'm your daddy, not your friend. Maybe some of the real needs in our world is that, well, to be a friend, to be someone who cares, to take the time to be a friend, and to take a break and to be a friend or someone who cares. Now, Jesus said of us, he said, you are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid, neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it gives light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. Do you realize what he tells us? He tells us, make no mistake about it, you are the light. It's not that you're a light about to blow out or it's glimmering, it's flickering, and you run out of gas. He says, no, you are a light. You are a city set on the hill. And the problem he seems to explain, though, is that this idea of a bushel, you got this basket that's been placed over this light, this brilliant, bright light. And as you walk up to this basket, you see the streams of light shooting out through the cracks. What he seems to imply is that this light is hid, that we've gone into hiding. It's not a fact that it's not a light. It's hiding. It's hiding. Hiding from love, hiding from relationship, the fear of love. Because what else could we be hiding from? Hiding from persecution? Well, I don't think so. Not in our culture. We have our four freedoms written in our Constitution. Freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom from want, freedom from fear. But there must be something that we fear greater than persecution. Could it be the fear of love? Or simply we have no time. No time for this relationship. You know, I think that we take for granted the power of influence that we have. Even in the circumstances of being covered over with that bushel, we still have a great power of influence. Imagine if we'd come out of hiding. But we take for granted the power of influence that we have. You know, I picture this imagery of the light and the bushel, the basket over that light. And I walk up to that bushel, and I see the light just pouring out the cracks of it. And I walk up to it, you know, and I lift it up, And I see me in there, underneath that basket. And I see me with all my little hobbies and luxuries and routines and avoidances and all the things. I'm just working away underneath that basket. And that light is hid. But we take for granted the power of influence that we have. I was at a party, a birthday party recently. A friend of mine who moved away, been gone for 15 years, invited me to his 40th birthday party. And I went there, and it was only a few people there. It was right many family members and a few friends, a few people. And before he opened his little gifts that we had gotten him, he said, I want to say a few words. He said, I want you to know that those I have invited here, that you influenced and impacted my life in a positive fashion. And that when my children get older, I would hope that they would meet someone like you, who would have a positive influence on my life. And that blew me away. I thought, me? It was positive? That was back in my carnal days, you know? I couldn't believe it. We take for granted the power of influence that we have. And I guess what I'm trying to say is, with this sermon, is that this hiding from love, hiding from relationships where we could be used to minister to others. If the walls of isolation could be torn down, maybe even church growth would break out. And regardless of whether it's by nature I'm an introvert, or I've been hurt by love, or I've been hurt by a friendship that's gone bad, or we don't have the time, we're too busy for this, I'm talking about surrendering our excuses and say, Lord, I've been hiding too long. Remove the bushel that hides my life. Help me to remove the bushel that's been covering me over, the basket that hides my life. Now, I'd like to leave you with five areas that may help us to come out of hiding and to express ourselves. The first one is to make a commitment to come out of hiding. Make a commitment to come out of hiding. I'd like for you to do that today. Turn back to Isaiah 58 and verse 6. Isaiah 58 and verse 6. This is a scripture that we usually use at the Day of Atonement. Isaiah 58 and verse 6, it says, Is not this the fast that I have chosen, to loose the bands of the wickedness, to undo the heavy burdens, and to let the oppressed go free, that you break every yoke? Is it not to deal thy bread to the hungry, and that you bring the poor that are cast out to thy house? When you see the naked, that you cover him, and, notice this, that you hide not yourself from your own flesh, that you hide not yourself from your own flesh. Now, you know, coming out of hiding, it makes you vulnerable, and I guess you can be taken advantage of when you come out of hiding. But you know, you'll never be able to help until you come out of hiding. You'll never know what God may have for you until you make that step to come out of hiding. And there may be many things. He mentions several things here, but it mentions other things that I think are very important that we can help out in. To undo the heavy burden, to let the oppressed go free. There's many areas here. But you never know what people's needs are until you throw off that bushel or basket and come out of and to let your light shine. I think a lot of times we pretend not to see. You ever done that? You know, I didn't really see that. You know, maybe someone, an opportunity or something, you know. My eyes are fooling me. I didn't really see that. You know. We don't see what we see. We don't hear what we hear. You know. We don't feel what we feel. But pretending not to see. But here it talks about, in verse 7, it says, is it not to deal or to share? That word, I just want to stop that. To share. To share what you have. In any area. Whatever it may be. Just the concept of, today I will share what I've been given. Just the idea of sharing. So, the first one was, make a commitment to come out of hiding and hide not yourself from your own flesh. Number two, look for opportunities to love and to be loved. Look for opportunities to love and to be loved in order to express yourself. The scripture says love is patient, it is kind, it envies not, it boasts not itself, it is not proud or rude, seeks not its own, keeps no record of wrong. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, it always hopes and perseveres. Love never fails. A lot of times we look at this, well, I've got this to do, I've got to love everybody. But what we rarely think about is that we can be loved in return. Love is a two-way street. And sometimes we think, well, no one can love me. I got a lot of different strange beliefs, But the root cause of the fear of love is that we fear no one could love me just the way I am. That was a song by Billy Joel, I think. Just the way you are. That's the root cause of the fear of love. We think, no one could love me just the way I am. That's why people go into hiding. That's why they hide from love. Because we feel comfortable with people we know love us just the way we are. You don't have to put on a front. You don't have to change your clothes. You don't have to clean the house. You don't have to do anything. Just, that's family there. Family. Just the way you are. So instead of taking that chance sometimes, it's easier to hide. Tennyson said, it is better to have loved and lost than to have not loved at all. Better to love and have lost than to not love at all. Number three, in order to express yourself and the goal of coming out of hiding is make some friends. Make some friends. Make a lot of friends, for that matter. Jesus makes a statement. It's sort of strange. He says, I tell you, use your worldly wealth to gain friends for yourself. So when it is gone, you will be welcome into eternal dwelling. He says, make a lot of friends. Make yourself friends. Make friends just for the sake of making friends. Not necessarily to convert them, because if that's your goal, you're going to be let down. Just for the sake of making friends. Make friends. C.S. Lewis said that out of the four loves, this one, I thought this was strange. He said, out of the four loves, this is the rarest of all loves. Friendship. Because he said it's possible to go through your entire life without ever experiencing true friendship. You can go to your grave without ever experiencing this type of love. And so, I think, okay, you got this person who is by nature an introvert. He's been hurt several times from relationship. And then, because of that hurt, he begins to invest all of his time and energy and hobbies and investments in order to avoid relationship. And then you take this quote that it's the rarest of all loves, friendship. And boy, that really, that's really tough. He says this. He says, in a circle of true friends, each man stands for nothing but what he is. I like that. In a circle of true friends, each person stands for nothing more than what he is. I am what I am. No one cares about anyone's family, professional status, class, or previous history. When friends, after a hard day's work, when we are relaxed and our drinks are at our elbows and the whole world and something beyond the world opens itself to our minds, when no one has any claim on and no responsibility for the other, but all men are free and equal, as if we'd only met a half an hour ago, then we may wonder on the natural level if it's anything better than this. And you've all experienced that, where you're able to let your hair down, you're just true friends, and no one has any claim on or responsibility for the other, you know. And I think in that statement, the key to being able to express your conviction is found in that statement. I don't have any claim on you. You don't have any claim on me. I don't have any responsibilities for you. You know, we are equal. But this is what I believe. This is where I stand. Acknowledging that truth will help us to build friendships where you can have a positive impact on people. A lot of times we go into relationships with claims, you know, responsibilities. This is what I expect of you. But anyway, make some friends. Number four, in coming out of hiding and expressing oneself, help a brother in need. Number four, help a brother in need. This is probably the most practical and easiest one of all to come out of hiding and to express yourself, is just to help a brother in need. 1 John, and this means anybody, 1 John 3 and verse 17. 1 John 3 and verse 17. He says, but whosoever has this world's good and sees his brother have need and shuts up his bowels of compassion from him, how dwells the love of God in him? At the store near my house, the guy, his name is Jed, he had 8 kidney stones, and, you know, all lodged up in his kidneys. And I found a little paper about a natural remedy that will help get rid of those and keep you from getting so many. So I made a copy of it, and I gave it to my sister-in-law because she works at the store, and I said, give that to Jed, because he might be helped by that. Now, it took a little bit of my time. And I had all these other things I had to do, though. But I had to sacrifice a little bit of my time. But, you know, look for opportunities. Maybe what John is declaring is that our closeness to people is a measuring stick, to some extent, to our closeness to God. Our closeness to people may be a measuring stick, to some extent, to our closeness to God. Number five, and the last one, is to rise above our need, to rise above our need to rise above people's imperfection, weakness, hypocrisy, sins. Our inability to rise above that keeps us in hiding a lot of times. We can be offended, you know. It was Lewis that said, he made this statement. He said, how a person could have anything but pity and sorrow for the homosexual, he couldn't understand. And I thought, you know, in my life, I haven't had that. I've been offended. But you see, that keeps you in hiding a lot of times. It keeps you in hiding. We are, of course, we are to lift people up, not fall down to their level. Not be so offended where I say I will have nothing to do with you. The last one was the need to rise above. Our need to rise above people's imperfections, weaknesses, hypocrisy, and sin. Okay, so in order to engage our culture, I think we must deal with the fundamental problem that Jesus talked about. And that is being in that hiding mode where we can hide from relationship, from love, or the fear of love. Our light can be underneath that bushel, hid away, and we must come out of hiding. So the 5 points were: make a commitment to come out of hiding. If we do this, look for opportunities to love and be loved. 3, make some friends. 4, help a brother in need. And 5, to rise above people's shortcomings. I think if you do this, that opportunities will present themselves. Opportunity to share your conviction, to share your heart, and maybe even to share the gospel. And instead of the usual response maybe of, you're crazy, people will say, hey, I'll think about that. Remember, Jesus said, you are a light. You are that light. That's what you are. And it's not that, you know, it's not that it is out. It is not, it is still glowing, gleaming through the cracks of the bushel. You can see it. What he tells us is simply to come out of hiding.